The NHL season is less than 2 weeks away. Preseason games are going on, Sean. We're going to be at the rink soon. And this is the At the Rink podcast, but we'll be there soon. I'm going to Tampa for opening night. You can kind of feel the excitement building, right? And you can also see the storylines developing and some teams are cutting down rosters. It's getting to be that we're getting closer. We're getting down to the nitty gritty a little bit here.
Yeah, this is a great time of year. Hope springs eternal. The weather starts to cool down a little bit while people's expectations rise. It's awesome. You see young kids doing things and you're like, oh, maybe they're going to make it. You look in Columbus and they have a couple of young kids over there. Cole Sillinger has had a great camp so far. They're talking about him being the number one center. That's what I mean by hope springs eternal. And then, you know, reality hits and, you know, you get into the season. But there's no better time than now. You flip on NHL Network and you see players in new places playing well, or you see new faces that you haven't heard of and you go try and figure out who this guy is. You know, do you remember him as a draft pick? Is he a free agent? Is he undrafted? It's a great time for hockey junkies. Before everybody hops back on the bandwagon in mid-October and really gets into it, this is a time when, you know, a lot of people that their lifeblood is hockey, they love this time of year.
Yeah, no question about it. In a little while, we should mention, in a little while, you'll hear an interview that we did with Jack Campbell, goalie of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we talked a lot about the upcoming docuseries, five-part docuseries, All or Nothing, Toronto Maple Leafs, that's going to debut on Amazon Prime across North America on October 1st, so that is Friday. So that interview with Jack Campbell is coming up. We talked a lot about the Leafs, too, and what's to come with that. But, Sean, we have a lot to talk about here with the season approaching. And the topic that immediately comes to my mind, the Pittsburgh Penguins. We find out last week that Evgeny Malkin is going to miss at least the first 2 months of the regular season, recovering from a knee surgery that he had in early June, an injury he sustained last year. We know that Sidney Crosby is going to miss at least a handful of games at the start of the season, recovering from that wrist surgery. I heard an interview with Brian Burke, their president. He said, we're the best practice team in the league right now. We work so hard in practice. And then that's a classic Brian Burke, you know, ism, a great line from Brian Burke. But I got to tell you, without Malkin and the question mark of Crosby, I think it brings a lot of questions about the Pittsburgh Penguins. And if they can continue this run of making the playoffs every year, which they've done every year since 2007, do you have those same questions? Because I have a lot of reservations right now about what, as we look at predictions and we're going to be doing our predictions on NHL.com, a lot of reservations of putting the Penguins in the playoffs.
Yeah. You didn't even get to the biggest question.
Who's their goalie?
And if it's Tristan Jarry, is he recovered from last year? I mean, again, you know, Brian Burke says they're a good practice team. They're also a good talking team, right? They've talked everything out, and Tristan Jarry's all better, and he's worked on it over the summer, and, you know, they expect him to be the goalie that he was last year in the regular season. You got to prove that on the ice. And you know, you look at a depleted team walking out of the gate and you kind of need a goalie to say, okay, I need to get us through this rough patch until we can get all our guys back and they're all firing on the same cylinders. You're going to count on your goalie to kind of stem the bleeding. And can Tristan Jarry do that? To me, that's the biggest question. It's not, you know, who's going to play center. They still have some players, you know, up front that can do some things, and you know, people are middling on their defense. I like their defense. So to me, the biggest question is goaltending for sure.
Yeah, it's a question. I got to say, though, I mean, I think Tristan Jarry had a bad playoffs, and we don't know how mentally that will impact him as he starts this season, because goaltending is as much mental as it is a physical position. But he was good in the regular season last year. And I disagree with you. I have less of a question about their goaltending as I do about their centers. We know that Crosby's going to come back at some point. He may miss four games. He may miss all of October. It depends on how he feels as he's returning. If he misses all of October, that's eight games. That's a lot of games. It doesn't seem like a lot of games, Sean, but I mean, this division's going to be so tight, the Metropolitan Division. You get off to a slow start, it could really doom you. And now you, on top of that, put Malkin out of the lineup. You're talking about Jeff Carter having to really elevate his game. They acquired Jeff Carter to be what I think he is right now, a third-line center. Now he has to be your first line center, maybe your second line center when Sidney Crosby comes back. I got more questions about their center depth than their goaltending. And I've done some, you know, preseason videos that were running on NHL.com, and I'm thinking about my predict. I didn't have the Penguins in the playoffs. And it goes to a question I got in the mailbag, you know, what is the toughest division? Rank the divisions from the mailbag that runs today. By the way, we're recording this Wednesday, September 29th. It was ranking the division strongest to weakest. I have the Metro as the strongest division, and I don't have the Penguins in the playoffs because it's such a strong division. And that's where you're running into dangerous territory here. If you're not strong down the middle, for years, they've been the best down the middle. And now those guys are not there.
But at least Jeff Carter has experience, right? He has a track record of playing up in the lineup, and you know what you're going to get out of him. You know, you keep on saying, oh, it was a bad year for Tristan Jarry at the end. Like, that's the last taste he has in his mouth. And what is his track record?
He has none. Yeah.
He has none. You don't know what's going to happen to this kid coming out of what was an awful experience, a truly awful experience where they thought they could go deep and he made mistakes that possibly cost them that series. There's people in Pittsburgh that certainly believe that. You know, he not only has to come back and prove to himself how mentally strong he has to come back and prove to his teammates how mentally strong he is. And again, you know, you walk onto the ice with less than full firepower and your goalie's not right, all of a sudden it becomes a really long season. So they're all questions, and you're right, the division is loaded, but it's loaded in a different way than it normally is. Like, I'm not 100% sold on Washington. You know, the teams that are traditionally the powers there, you know, you look at the standings 2 years ago, 1 through 4 was Washington, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Carolina. Honestly, the only team out of those four that I think is still going to be there is Carolina. And I even have questions about them with all the turnover they've had. So it's going to be a wild division.
I look at that division, and the reason I ranked it the top division was I see six legitimate playoff teams, six teams that right now are saying to themselves, we better make the playoffs. We are a playoff team. You know, the two that aren't saying that or shouldn't be saying that, I'm sure they are, but they shouldn't be, are the Devils and the Blue Jackets. But we don't know. I mean, they could jump up. You know, I mean, the Devils right now, you know, improved back end with Dougie Hamilton. A little bit of a question mark in goal. You know, I think, you know, they got Jonathan Bernier, but now this week we find out Mackenzie Blackwood, you know, he's not vaccinated. So there is some concern, I would imagine, there's some health concern there. And we'll see where that goes. But I look at the six teams. The Islanders, to me, could be the favorite in the East. They're one goal away from going to the Stanley Cup final last year. Now, they didn't get that goal, but they're one goal away, I would say, from winning the Stanley Cup last year, because they were better than Montreal, just as Tampa was. And they went to game 7 and lose 1-0. They're improved. Carolina's still right there. I still like Washington. There's some reservations, but I still like Washington. The Rangers are very much an up-and-coming team. The Flyers got better. And then you've got the Penguins there, too. I mean, there's potentially two or three legit Stanley Cup favorites in that grouping. You know, depending how you shape it out, I think the Islanders are one for sure. And I think you can make the argument that Carolina is. So I look at the divisions. The Central is tough, and there's a lot of parity, but you got one dominant team and then probably six teams that are right in the mix. The Pacific has one dominant team and then a couple in the mix. And the Atlantic has four or five good teams, no question about it, but then it's significant drop off after that.
To me, that makes them the best division. I mean, you talk about the Atlantic and you know, you have the two-time Stanley Cup champion in that division, probably going for a good bet to get a third one, which hasn't been done in forever. You have a Florida team, which was really good last year, and they're going to be better this year. You know, they're getting Ekblad back. That's a huge piece for them. Again, goaltending, you got to think that Bobrovsky's going to be better than he was. You got a Toronto team, and we're going to get into this with Jack Campbell and you know, everything else, but a team where their GM has basically said, if we don't win, there's going to be changes. Like, they believe that they're an elite team. And then you got the Boston Bruins, who have been the class of the NHL for a decade. You know, they've only won once in the last 11 years, but they've been right there every year, and there's been significant turnover. But they still have a core that could make things dangerous. And then, oh, by the way, I know you're down on them, but you got the Stanley Cup. You got this other Stanley Cup finalist in that division as well. So I think when you look at that division, you're going to take some beatings there. To me, that's the best division. It's top heavy, but it's the best division. Yeah, the best teams are in that division.
The thing is, you still have Ottawa up and coming, but not ready yet. No question about it. Detroit, probably 3 years away, 2-3 years away, and then Buffalo. So there are easier games in that division. I don't know that there's necessarily an easy game in the Metro, to be honest. I mean, Columbus, New Jersey, as I mentioned, they shouldn't be looked at as being at the level of the other six teams right now, but the Devils are not going to be an easy game. They're kind of like Ottawa in that sense, where they're not going to be an easy game, but there's no Buffalo in there. There's no Detroit in there. And by the way, Buffalo, can we talk about this for a little bit? The Jack Eichel situation, they take the captaincy away from Jack Eichel. Look, I get it. I guess I wasn't surprised either, Sean, but I just don't know if it was necessary to do that at this point. You know, like, I'd be shocked if Jack Eichel plays another game for the Buffalo Sabres at any point, but he's not going to be there. He's not there. He's not going to be there. He's injured. There's disagreement, obviously. But unless they're planning to name a new captain right now, and I don't see a captain, I don't know that they need one. I don't know that there is one there. Unless they're planning to name a new captain right now, what's the point of taking it away from it? Just let it be. Nobody's worried about it, you know?
Because when you break up with your girlfriend, you don't leave it hanging there. You don't be like, well, you keep this and maybe it'll come back. You're like, give me my stuff back. We're all done. Give me my stuff back. I need to move on. You need to move on.
Yeah.
It's me, not you. Let's move on. Give me my varsity jacket back and we'll go our separate ways.
So you're saying the C is the varsity jacket?
It's a vestige of that relationship. And if they're not going to have that relationship anymore, why leave it hanging there? Hey, who's your captain? Oh, this guy that doesn't want to be here, that won't do what we think should be done for the good of the team. He's our captain. Why?
What if it mends? What? I mean, I get that.
Then you give it back to him.
I don't believe that. There was no need to take it away from him. He's the captain of the team, but he's not there. He's not working as the captain of the team. He's not doing anything as the captain of the team. To me, it created a storyline. That's all it did. It created a storyline. It created conversation, which is great. That's what we're doing right now. And I'm not surprised by it. I guess you could see it coming, but I just didn't see the need for it. There's nobody that's going to be wearing the C for Buffalo this season anyway. I mean, why you got to strip the guy of it? Strip him of it when you trade him.
What if you don't think he's a good captain?
No, but that's not the reason they gave. They gave the reason of, you know, a captain has got to be the heartbeat of your team. And right now, with him not being there, he can't be the heartbeat of the team.
There's a little bit of an understatement there, isn't there? There's something, well, yeah. The quiet part was left unsaid this time. Maybe we don't think he's a good enough captain, and this is a fine cover. Look, he's not here. We need to move on. So eventually we're going to name a new captain. He's not going to be it. So now we take it away in one fell swoop while we're also saying he's not showing up for camp. And then you don't have two storylines. You have one storyline. You've taken care of it now. If and when he comes back, he's no longer the captain. You do not then say when he shows up, oh, by the way, Jack Eichel's back. He's not our captain anymore. DEFCON 5 again. Let us put out another fire. They torched the whole thing.
They definitely did.
And they took their medicine and they dealt with it. And now it's done. There's no more. Oh, we're going to take a break.
Oh, it's not done, Sean.
This
part, the C part is done. But this, yeah. I think even Don Granato brought it up that they're going to try to keep everything on the ice and keep the distractions off the ice and all that. But everywhere they go, for at least the beginning part of the season, this is going to be the topic of conversation that they get asked about, and that eventually bleeds into the room. Like, and this is why a couple of weeks ago I was saying, this is another reason why a couple of weeks ago I was telling you they needed to deal with this, and they didn't. And now, look, they'll be able to handle this. It will be okay, but this is going to be a distraction that they're going to have to deal with and they're going to have to handle. And oh, by the way, along the way, they're a team that not many people expect to win many games this season too. They're going to have to deal with that too.
Well, I think they know that going in, and I think, you know, they're trying to move forward and you're not letting them. They're trying to heal and walk away from something that wasn't good for anybody. And you keep on asking.
Because the guy is still there. Well, he's not physically there but he's still a part of the organization. He's still there. And there's an ongoing disagreement between Jack Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres that remains unresolved. That's going to be the storyline of the Buffalo Sabres season until it's resolved.
He's hurt. We forget about hurt guys all the time. Do you think people are going to ask for 2 months about Evgeny Malkin? No. He's not a part of their organization right now. The only way it becomes a storyline is if they let it be a storyline for 2 months. But there's so much else going on, Dan. I've won this argument. The varsity letter was the greatest thing ever. I
got to say, I'll take the L for the girlfriend in the varsity jacket. I'll take the L on that one. That I still think my points are well taken, but you win with that analogy.
We'll put another one in my little ledger over here.
There you go. Take one. All right. So where do you want to go from here?
We'll go. Now I'll give you a chance to win and get back at somebody else. Every year I watch EJ on NHL Network. I get our guest a couple of weeks ago, just ravage you over your Super 16
right.
Every week. He gets to see it and pick it apart. And he goes on NHL Network and he savages you and how could you be this stupid? Here's my list. Well, NHL Network put out a list over the summer, and it was a great list. It was the top 50 players in the NHL right now. 1 through 10 just came out. There were some questionable picks to me. I know there was for you, and you have the floor. So the list was in this order: Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Leon Draisaitl, Kucherov,
yeah,
Crosby, Austin Matthews, Andre Vasilevsky, Victor Hedman, Artemi Panarin, and Brad Marchand.
All right. So before I begin here, I have to ask you a question. Should goalies be on a list like this?
Of course they should.
Okay.
There should be 5 of them on the list.
Exactly. All right. So that's number 1. All right. Because they're the most important position outside of quarterback in sports. It might be the most important position in any sports, at least the 4 major sports in North America, right? All right. So, nevertheless, if goalies should be on the list, and they should be, then Andre Vasilevsky should be number 1. Okay. He should be number 1. And that's taking nothing away from Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid is by far and away the most talented player in the National Hockey League, but he's won absolutely nothing. Okay. Whereas Andre Vasilevsky is a back-to-back Stanley Cup champion goalie who has been the biggest factor in his team's runs. There's no question about it. So he should be number 1. Then let's not. Yeah. Okay. I see Vasilevsky on that list in the top 10. I see Hedman and I see Kucherov. Well, I don't see Braden Point. Where's Braden Point? Braden Point is, give me Braden Point all day. I might pick him number 1. If I had to redraft the entire NHL right now, I might pick Braden Point number 1. And again, taking nothing away from McDavid or MacKinnon or Draisaitl, but Braden Point drives a line, drives a power play, is excellent two-way. He's an excellent two-way player, skates just, I mean, I hesitate to say as well as McDavid, because I don't think anybody in the planet skates like McDavid. But he's an elite skater. He's got elite vision. He's an elite goal scorer. He's led the league in goals in the playoffs the last 2 years. And oh, by the way, his team has won the Stanley Cup both of those years. He's been a huge reason why. Maybe number 2 behind Vasilevsky in that sense. So where is Braden Point? He was 14 on their list. I was shocked he wasn't in the top 10. I love Artemi Panarin. I think he's a terrific player. I don't think he's top 10 in the league right now. I think Austin Matthews is an elite goal scorer, but he has faded when it matters most. And I don't think he's top 10 in the league right now. And I think you can make the argument that Marchand, as good as he is not top 10 because Patrice Bergeron might be the best player on that line. So yeah, I got a lot of differences with this list. And another one, where's Mark Stone? Mark Stone wasn't great in the playoffs. I get that. Mark Stone is a winger who plays like a center and handles himself in an elite fashion on both ends of the ice. So yeah, I got a lot of questions about it. I'm glad they do it because it gives us an opportunity to talk about it, but Andre Vasilevsky should be number one.
Well, now I know why EJ ravages you every week, because you must get into the moonshine, dude.
What are you talking about?
Braden Point.
Braden Point. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Are you telling me, first of all, it's not an MVP list, so Vasilevsky isn't number one. These are the best players in the NHL. I love Andre Vasilevsky. He's the best goalie in the league. He is not the best player in the league. It's not, there's not even a conversation about it. I mean, we know who the best player in the league is. There is nobody that has the skill set that Connor McDavid has.
He's the most talented player in the league.
That's the best player in the league.
No, he's the
we're not talking about an MVP. If we're having an MVP, that would be a different discussion. He is the best player in the league. When you ask every other player who is the best player in the league, they say Connor McDavid. There isn't even a hesitation.
No, I get that.
Oh, by the
I
way,
that,
it's Connor McDavid.
I guess I look at it in a different way.
And your argument that Braden Point wins and that puts him up on the list. If Connor McDavid ended up on the Tampa Bay Lightning, you don't think he has two Stanley Cups right now?
Well, I don't know what happens if in that case. I don't know who they have. I don't know what happens.
If everything's exactly the same, if Connor McDavid walks into Braden Point's situation, they probably have three, four. Who knows? Like, you can't. I love Braden Point. To make that argument,
I'm not saying that Braden Point is number one. I'm not saying
you did.
That Braden
you said he's
no,
number
I didn't.
One.
I said he's number one. I said I could potentially redraft the league and take him number one. Okay, because of everything he does. Because of everything he does. That's why. And I look at the totality of what a guy has done, and I look at the most valuable player part of this, not best player part. So if I'm taking a guy. Again, I'm throwing it out there saying Braden Point could be that guy. So could McKinnon. In fact, maybe I would say McKinnon ahead of Point, but I got to see more from McDavid when it matters most, Sean. I really do. I have to see more. I have to see more from McKinnon when it matters most.
You know what this is like?
Fun.
And it's very early.
It's fun.
And it crosses over to another sport. For years, Matthew Stafford with the Detroit Lions.
Right.
Was a middling quarterback because he played on a horrendous team. Just a bad team. Mm-hmm. No offense to all the Lions fans out there listening, but I think we can all agree he played on a bad team. All of a sudden, he goes to the LA Rams. They know what they're doing. The dude's in the MVP conversation. You put a player with talent on a team with talent, and that talent shines.
Are you saying the Oilers don't have talent? The Leafs don't have talent.
I'm saying that the Oilers don't have as much talent as the Tampa Bay Lightning. And that makes Braden Point a better player because he's surrounded by better players and he's able to slide around in the lineup and he doesn't get all the matchups that Connor McDavid gets and he's not expected to do all the things Connor McDavid does. It's a lot easier to be Braden Point than it is to be Connor McDavid. I think we'll all agree.
Hold on. Two things to that. Number one, Braden Point is the number one center, as is Connor McDavid, right? The number two center in Edmonton is Leon Draisaitl, Hart Trophy winner, Art Ross Trophy winner. The number two center in Tampa is Anthony Cirelli. He is not Leon Draisaitl. So I will give you matchup issues here and tell you that teams have to pick their poison. And maybe sometimes it is easier to be Connor McDavid than it is to be Braden Point, simply because he has Leon Draisaitl.
If Leon Draisaitl is the number two center, who the hell is Connor McDavid passing to? And who is Braden Point passing to?
Well, he's passing to Nikita Kucherov, so that kind of helps.
Yeah, and there's the end of the conversation right there. The top sixes don't match up. They're not even close.
Fine.
It's like Tom Brady being the quarterback of the Patriots. He wouldn't be who he is if the Patriots stunk. He would be a bad quarterback if the scheme didn't fit him and he didn't have skilled players around him to make him better, to make him the best quarterback ever. He wouldn't be that. He didn't do it by himself. Connor McDavid can't do it by himself. Braden Point can't do it by himself. Braden Point has made a nice career out of what he's had, but he has been privileged.
He has been
to play in a lineup that any other player in the league would kill
for. The other part of my thinking here, too, it goes back to how well players are playing because of confidence that they have in the guy behind him. And there is nobody in the league better than Andrei Vasilevskiy at what he does. And his ability to play his position bleeds all through the team, spreads confidence and belief all through the team. And that, in a way, also makes it easier to be Braden Point, makes it easier to be Nikita Kucherov, makes it easier to be Steven Stamkos. And that is another reason to look at it. If you're talking about goaltending being the most important position on the ice, and you're talking about the guy who is by far and away, in my opinion, the best at that position, how can that guy not be number one on your list?
Because he's not the best player. But we've talked enough about this. I think we need to get into another goalie.
Yes.
Who's got a great story to tell. And I'm so excited about this, having seen a couple of the trailers. God, is it fantastic. I mean, all these behind the scene things are great, but this one to me is so much better. And so the goalie we're talking about is Jack Campbell, and he's been kind enough to join us to promote All or Nothing. He's a guy who won, 11 games in a row last year?
Yeah.
Like, it's a function of the way your team's playing. It's a function of all those things. So Jack joined us. He's great. He gives us a lot of insight about what happens in All or Nothing this year, which debuts in a couple of days on Amazon Prime. And as a fan, you should eat this up because some of the scenes are just unbelievable.
Absolutely, Sean. You should all be looking forward to it. And here is that interview with Jack Campbell. Jack, thanks so much for hopping on with us. This is great. So All or Nothing, Toronto Maple Leafs on Amazon Prime Video. Just give us a little insight into what fans are going to see here. Remember, fans weren't in the buildings last year, so they're going to get to see a whole different side of a team that they didn't see at all of last year.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show today, guys. And really excited for, the show to come out. You get to kind of see different things you definitely wouldn't normally be able to see, that's for sure. So, the interactions with teammates, coaches and management, their interactions, just different things around the rink that I think it's really cool, even as a player, to see some of those things that we don't often get to be a part of. So I think the fans will be really excited, and it's definitely a cool show.
Jack, that's one of the things I was curious about, and kind of seeing a little bit of the show. As a player, you're so inside hockey, but there's scenes in there between like Kyle and Sheldon that as a player, I would assume you're never privy to. Did you learn things?
Exactly. I mean, it's definitely pretty eye-opening to see the different side of, the business. We know the play in the game and kind of what comes with that, but seeing, Kyle do his job a little bit, and then, Sheldon, you get a little glimpse of both of them, and, obviously it's just a little bit here and there, so we don't get the full thing, but it's definitely a really cool insight on, just the passion and the intensity that comes with the territory.
I think the beauty of these is they're docuseries, so they play live. Like, right. I mean, we're seeing the finished product, but the storyline evolves as the season evolves, as, players jump out and do things, and you become a storyline in this show because your season evolved in such a positive way throughout the regular season. And what was that like for you then to almost become, I guess, you were becoming a breakout player on the ice and a breakout star on camera, off of it too.
Yeah. I mean, I just think the success our team had, the way, the guys played in front of me, ultimately I had some personal success, but honestly, winning in the playoffs, that's our goal. And unfortunately, that's the end result of the show that everybody knows. So I think, there's a lot of things we built off from last year, but we just want to be a lot better this season. And we're really excited to get back out there.
When you think about the show and you think about what the legacy is going to be, it's kind of a time capsule of not only that season, but of your season, and something that you'll always have. People always talk about memories and they live inside your head, but this is a visual documentation of probably the greatest year of your career so far. And that must be a pretty cool memento to have.
Yeah, I think my parents will appreciate seeing, you know, just a day in the life of all the guys. And, you know, I think they'll get a sense of joy just to see how much fun we have together, you know, the group and how hard we're working and how much we care. You know, for me, I it's kind of nice to have it just because, you know, that feeling of the end, you know, the playoffs. You know, I'm going to use that and make sure I'm ready to go every single year, and I can keep looking back on that and, not dwelling on it, but learning from it. And, you know, just remember, you know, it's worth it to do, you know, go the extra mile and to get it done. So definitely puts a fire in all of our bellies to, come out this year and win some games.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that. I definitely want to play it forward to this season, but just, you know, quickly to look back on that experience, we're talking about All or Nothing Toronto Maple Leafs on Amazon Prime. It debuts October 1st. I'm trying to imagine a camera sitting in my room here, just filming me do what I do for a normal, you know, for a living. What was that like for you to just have cameras around and just filming you, and you just have to be yourself, even though you know they're there and they can blend in after a while, I guess, but just, you know, they're there. Like, what was that like to, what's that feeling like?
Yeah, you kind of hit it on the head there. Like, at first, you know, you notice the camera and you're kind of thinking about it a little bit. But then, you know, within an hour or something of the day one, you don't even remember it's there. And you're just being yourself. And, you know, I think that's the great part about Amazon. They did a great job of capturing some really cool moments, you know, great moments, some, you know, intense moments. And you really get to see the raw footage of, you know, the emotions of all the guys. And, you know, the passion, and I think it's really cool what they did. And, you know, the crew was great. You know, we actually became pretty close with all the guys, just, you know, they're around so much, and they were a joy to be around, and did a great job.
Obviously, hockey's already huge in Toronto, and you don't have to do much to promote it. But I'm curious, having seen a little bit and having lived through it, do you think this is something in a more general hockey sense that'll be like the F1 show they did that you know, made, I don't know if you've seen that show, but it's made F1 way more popular than it had been in other circles. Like in the United States, it was never a popular sport. And then they did basically an all or nothing with F1. And now you find Formula One fans everywhere. Do you think, you know, this show has that ability to do that with maybe non-traditional hockey fans?
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, it's entertaining too. You know, you see a lot of, you know, fun clips, you see intense clips. So even if you're not familiar with hockey, or you're not a Leafs fan, but you like hockey, I think it kind of grabs anybody's attention who's looking for a good show to watch, and kind of brings a lot of, you know, cool elements, whether it's, you know, guys having fun together or guys, you know, just that intensity that we have that you guys all know about. And I just think it's really cool, and hopefully it draws a lot of people to hockey.
If I'm a fan, I watch all 5 episodes. What's my takeaway from this? What am I learning about the Toronto Maple Leafs? The main takeaway, do you believe?
I'd say, regardless of the results, you know, that we've had in the past, I think there's no doubt the desire to win and the things we're willing to do and just how much we care as a group, you know, that's from management, coaches, players, you know, we're with the fans and we want it so bad. And, you know, there's no excuses. We're using it to fuel us. And I think you'll see that, and you'll see it this season with the way we come out this year.
And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this year. You guys get back together. It's a little different. It's more like a traditional training camp, but that pain and disappointment that you speak so clearly of lingers. And I'm wondering how that, you know, I heard a couple of people talk about John having people over during the summer and trying to hash it out at his cabin and everything else. It seems like it's not something that's being put away. It seems like it's there as almost a constant reminder to be better.
Exactly. I mean, we're not going to shy away from what happened in the past, but, you know, we're not dwelling on it. We're using it as fuel. And, you know, it's not a good feeling to fall short of your goal. And, you know, as long as you remember that and it drives you in a positive way, you know, like, we all work super hard this summer and we don't want to repeat that feeling. So we want to be on the other side and on top. So I think it's important for all of us to learn from it and to be ready to go.
These were your numbers last season: 17-3-2, 2.15 goals against, and a 921 save percentage in 22 starts. How much better do you be? Do you feel about yourself, your game, your place in the NHL after a season like that? And how much more confident are you now?
Yeah, I mean, I just have so much confidence in our team. And, you know, personally, it was great to get some playoff experience and gave me a lot of confidence going into the summer. But, you know, that's just not good enough in my standards. I want to be better, and I just want to keep getting better each season and each game and each day. So I think it's a good start, but, you know, I'm ready to turn the page and be better for this group this year.
You talked about the journey in the show a little bit, very emotional time when you're on Hockey Night in Canada, and the coaches talked a little bit about it and how long your journey was, and it went some wild places, Idaho, Ontario, you know, and it took longer than maybe you envisioned, as you said. What was the key? What was the key to the turnaround for you?
I mean, I'm very fortunate to have a lot of great people in my life who care about me. And, you know, some are hockey coaches, some are, you know, my parents, I got a couple mentors from high school that I still talk to. I just have a really nice inner circle, and they never stop, you know, caring and believing in me. And, eventually it just kind of, clicked. I guess it took a lot longer to click than I hoped, and probably Dallas hoped for too. But, you know, that's just part of life, I guess. You know, sometimes you want something and it's not always when you want it, and you just got to keep working for it. So just very fortunate to have been in LA, and my teammates and coaches there helped me so much. And, you know, when Kyle brought me over to Toronto, it's just been life-changing. I just love being a Toronto Maple Leaf and do anything to be better for this organization.
I actually wanted to go back to something in the show, but more of a broader topic. When you see guys sitting on the opposite side of the table as Kyle Dubas, right, or Sheldon Keefe, and you don't, I'd imagine sometimes you don't know what you're going in there for, what's going to be said, and you've probably been in that spot too. What is that like as a player to walk into essentially the boss's office, right, and you really don't know like what he's bringing you in there for? You might have an inkling or whatnot, but you don't really know, and it could be life-changing for you.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I've been in Kyle's office yet. So,
that's, you know, good not for you.
Not that bad. Just, you know, I feel like we just do our own things. And but with Sheldon, I remember last year it was kind of a turning point for my season. We like had done the record, and then I had like a 3-game slump where I wasn't playing great, and he brought me in. And you know, he's just a great coach at being intense when he needs to, and then being personable and talking through things, which I think it's a great quality that Sheldon has. And, you know, we were able to kind of figure out what was going on, and he gave me a nice pep talk and went out and kind of turned the page on that. So, you know, it's always an interesting feeling walking in there and into the coach's office, but, you know, just the way Sheldon handles himself and definitely fires us all up to play great for him.
Jack, I think everybody understood how difficult last year was for anybody going through this, but I think only hockey players understand how difficult doing your job was. One of the things that struck me in this show was at one point Freddie was talking and he's like, I haven't seen Jack all year. He was hurt. I was hurt. Protocols didn't really allow you guys to hang out and build that camaraderie you want. How different is this year for you as you kind of get back to normal as a goaltender to have that ability to bounce things off of your backups and training camp, you know, work more closely with your coach, everything, like just that return to normalcy where you have that, you know, you talked about your support group outside of hockey, but to have that support group inside of hockey where you can be together as a group.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's really tough because Freddie and I, from the moment I got traded to Toronto, we went out for dinner before COVID and really kind of got some momentum going as partners and friends. And then obviously the pause happened, and last season, like Freddie said, with being injured, both of us at different times, it was tough because, you know, we cared a lot about each other and wanting to help each other. But when you're not there, it's tough to, you know, you can call and text and things like that, but just being around the guys again this year and, you know, having the freedom to, you know, being smart about everything. But if somebody wants to come over for dinner and hang out a little bit and get to know some of the newer guys. I think it's huge. It's a great part of the game. And, you know, it's exciting that fans are back in the building to get that energy back. And just, you know, obviously we're all still being very smart about the way we live, but it's definitely great to get to know the teammates and actually get to hang out with them at the rink and away from the rink.
Jack, so much is talked about with the Leafs now about it. It only matters come playoff time, right? I mean, it got to get over the hump. It only matters come playoff time. There's 82 games you got to play, hopefully, until playoff time comes around. It's a matter of a grind, but it's also, I guess, a matter of patience too, to get there. How, you know, what's your mind? How's your mindset? The team's mindset? How do you guys feel about that? That everybody outside of the team, and I'm sure a lot of people inside the team, it really only matters what we do come playoff time, but you got to get there and you got to play 82 games. How do you balance that, I guess?
Well, I think our standard's high. So the only way to get to where we want to go is to be great each day. So, I mean, if we just focus on, you know, right now and being, having a good practice, and then the next day having a great game, I think that'll give us a lot of momentum. And I mean, it's a tough league. We have a tough division. We got to get into the playoffs. So everybody's mindset should be, you know, learning and being better each day. And I got full confidence that if we have that mindset and we just keep working as a team, I think we're going to have great success regular season and playoffs.
What's the most important Stanley Cup habit that coach preaches?
Ooh, it's definitely a few habits. I mean, I just think, yeah, Sheldon's got a lot of great things that he says. I don't know if I should say much, but I'll just say, you know, compete. You know, you just look around and look at the Stanley Cup champions and they're always competing. And, you know, it makes me want to raise my level of compete. It makes the whole group raise their level. So that's what we're going to be doing this year, is competing and, you know, working as a team and getting better.
You don't have to speak for Sheldon. He speaks for himself quite plainly on the show. All or Nothing, Toronto Maple Leafs. Jack, thanks so much for joining us and talking about that and your season ahead too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Great stuff there from Jack, and we thank him for jumping on with us. Again, it's All or Nothing, Toronto Maple Leafs. It's narrated by actor Will Arnett, a huge Leafs fan. It's a Canadian Amazon original, and it debuts on Amazon Prime across North America October 1st. It's a 5-part docuseries. And Sean, like you were saying before we were going into the interview with Jack, the behind-the-scenes stuff, seeing meetings in the GM office with Kyle Dubas, in the coach's office with Sheldon Keefe, and the interactions there. You get to see all of that stuff in this docuseries that we're just not privy to. And even as you brought up in the interview, players are not privy to a lot of this stuff either. So they get to learn more about what's going on. This behind the scenes stuff, it's really, they're always well done. They're always very interesting. And having just caught a glimpse of a screener, this one looks like it goes even further, even more, even deeper than what we've seen in the past. So really looking forward to it. And all fans should be, especially because last season you didn't really get to be in the building. So you couldn't see a lot. Everything you were just watching was games on TV.
Yeah. Look, there's two things. One that struck me very early on. The first one was really funny, and it was Joe Thornton driving to the rink, listening to the radio, and Brian Burke, before he joined the Penguins, came on and was basically saying that Joe Thornton was excess to the Maple Leafs' needs, and he was comparing it to the grocery store. You go to the grocery store and you need something and you don't buy it, and you buy something you like, you know, you buy an extra box of Malamars. That's my example, not Brian Burke's, when you really need bread. And that was basically the comparison he made while Joe Thornton was sitting in his car at a red light laughing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's awesome. Like, you never think about that. Like, I'm sure guys are doing that without the rink as they're going to the rink. They're listening to me. Braden Point right now is driving to the rink, and you're his best friend. When you go to Tampa, he's going to give you a big hug. That's all I can think is that's what you were trying to do. But the right. the other one that amazed me was there was a point in the season, I think it was when Toronto played Edmonton and they lost, and Austin Matthews came out and said that they were too conservative. They were too worried about McDavid, the best player in the league, and Draisaitl, and they didn't play their game. And Sheldon Keefe was mad. He was livid. And he walked into Dubas's office and, you know, he's laying it all on the line and they've known each other forever. And Kyle Dubas is like, look, here's what you got to do. You got to deal with this right now. You got to talk to the player. And then they had him going to talk to the player. And the whole thing's amazing. And I know Kyle came out the other day and said, I'm not going to answer questions about the show all year because we need to move on. But I would love to do like one of those things they do on Bravo where it's like the after show. Mm-hmm. And they all sit around and they talk about it and they interview the people that are involved in like the housewives or whatever it is. Like I would love to have like an Amazon Prime bonus segment where all the main characters were sitting in a room, you know, with maybe a drink or two, and you get to ask them all the questions about what happened in these five episodes because it's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's really good stuff. Like I said, I mean, it takes you into areas that you A, don't think of, and B, never would get a chance to see, you know, if these shows didn't exist. So definitely check it out again on Amazon Prime across North America, October 1st, which is Friday. It debuts All or Nothing Toronto Maple Leafs. Let's talk about the Leafs, though, a little bit, Sean. For now, let's play it forward a little bit. And we heard from Jack talking about disappointment from last season, being a motivator and driving them. You know, obviously one of their most important players is Austin Matthews, and Austin Matthews on Tuesday was back on the ice practicing with the Leafs. He had the wrist surgery on August 13th, taking some shots, participating in some drills, non-contact, but a good sign for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they continue to say that he will be ready for opening night, October 13th against the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, I mean, obviously they need him, but getting him ramped up and ready to go. If he's fully ready to go on opening night, then the Leafs ideally should be ready to go on opening night. And then we'll see how this plays out. But I brought it up again with Jack, like they got an 82 game tour here to get to where they need to get to. And it's going to require a lot of patience on their part to continue to push through this grind of a regular season, because the only thing that matters with Toronto, Sean, is what happens in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I think they can use this as a dress rehearsal. You know, they can work
on... That's what I was looking for. I couldn't think of the words. Dress rehearsal. Thank you.
They could, of course. That's part of my role here. Part of my role here is to fill in the words that you can't think of. But yeah, I mean, they and you think of the names when I can't think of them. So we make a perfect couple. But look, they can work on all the things that they've identified, right? Holding leads late. Like what you have to do when you have championship pedigree is you have to work on situations, right? You're up by a goal late in a game. You can't give it up. And if you do, you can't be like, oh, it's regular season. You know, again, one of the big things in that show was the game that they lost to Ottawa, the 5-1, and they ended up losing 6-5 in overtime. Like championship teams don't do that. And they can't do like that. To me, is what the regular season for. You know, they've talked about maybe revamping their power play a little bit. They've tried some different looks in training camp. All of that. Like, if you're a good coach and you know you have a good team, that's what you spend the regular season doing. That's what John Cooper does in Tampa. You know, he spends time moving guys around a little bit, trying different things. So when the playoffs come and somebody's missing or somebody's slumping or whatever it might be, he has three or four different answers. And he knows what that recipe is going to come out as when he changes all the ingredients. So to me, that's what Toronto needs to do this year. They believe they're a playoff team. And unless something goes drastically wrong, they should be working on playing playoff hockey and not being surprised when the game gets heavy, when they get to the playoffs. But, you know, you speak of Austin Matthews, and he played most of last year with that bad wrist. Mm-hmm. And think about what he did. Yeah. Now, if they've fixed it, oh boy.
Yeah. He's an elite goal scorer. There's no question about it. But again, what you were just saying just brought me back to our conversation before our interview with Jack Campbell and before you shredded me about Braden Point. The divisions, you're talking about Toronto having an opportunity as a dress, use the regular season as a dress rehearsal to work on things. You talk about Tampa, that same opportunity. They can do that because they play in the Atlantic Division, John. Because there's three teams in that. They have to beat out two teams, really. One, maybe two teams to reach the playoffs, depending on wild cards and how they break out. You can't do that in the Metro. You can't do that in the Central. You got to be ready to go and you can't be always just working on little things because you know you're better than so-and-so, right? That's why, as top heavy as the division is, to me, that's why it's not the best division. The top two are the Metro and the Central because of the parity within the divisions. They may not have the same, the top of the division might not be as good as the Atlantic. And I think you're right about that. And you've got three, maybe four, Toronto's got to prove it, potential Stanley Cup contenders in there. Whereas I don't know that you could say that about every other division, but the bottom drops out, and it drops out in the Pacific division too. It does not drop out in the Metro, and it does not drop out in the Central until you get way down low. And that's why in my mailbag, which is out today, Wednesday, I had the top two as the Metro and the Central. You brought it up with the Leafs and the Lightning, and it just got me thinking about another argument against that division being the best division.
Okay, because none of the other teams in any of the other divisions are going to work on things during the year because they're better than teams. That's a silly argument. I think the only thing that we agree on is the Pacific is kind of the poorest of the divisions. You know, and we said the same thing about the North last year, and then look what happened. The Pacific isn't deep. There's some teams on the bottom that are kind of dragging it down, and that's good for the teams that are at the top because they need to work on their games, you know. Edmonton needs to figure things out. They need to figure out how to play, so when the playoffs come, it's not a different game for them. Seattle needs to figure out whatever they need to figure out as a new team. And it, by the way,
what they are.
Yeah. By the way, it was great to see them finally on the ice this week and you know, playing a game.
Those jerseys are so sweet.
Yeah. Playing a game and, you know, good for them. They go and they play their first game and it, you know, they bring out all their big guns, you know, and they're like, here's our team.
Yeah,
and you never see that in training camp. So that was awesome. Colorado needs to figure out why they can't get by the second round, what they need to add. And, you know, so this whole you can't tune up during the regular season in the Atlantic division is just.
No, you can tune up if you're in the other divisions. My point is that it can't be as focused on that. And I think Tampa has done that. You're talking about Toronto. They should do that. There's no question about it. The Washington Capitals can't tune up. The Pittsburgh Penguins can't tune up. They've got to
no, because they're not good enough. They got to survive.
They got to grind. They got to go out there and do it. Like I said, the top of the division in the Atlantic is very strong, but the bottom drops out and it makes it not as strong as the other two divisions that I mentioned, weighing the Metro and the Central. In regards to the Pacific, you see John Gibson's comments. It was a couple of days ago. John Gibson talked about how he's sick and tired of losing in Anaheim. You know, we got a lot of young guys who are not, you know, so young anymore. They've got a couple of years of experience. They've got to take their games to the next level. I would imagine he's talking about guys like Max Jones and Max Comtois and a few others. And you're bringing in Jamie Drysdale and Trevor Zegras, but you also have a general manager there in Anaheim, Sean, who's talked about how this is a rebuild, right? So you've got the franchise goalie saying it's time to win, and you got the general manager saying it's a rebuild. This is going to clash at some point, isn't it?
You would think, unless they surprise everybody, right? And I feel bad for John Gibson. I think he's such a talented goalie, and he's kind of left out to dry. Even if they were good, he wouldn't get a lot of publicity because he plays out west and a lot of people forget about him. It's not a huge market. But it's got to be hard, right, to be an elite player like that. And again, like you talk about players that are really good. Like, I don't think there's a huge separation between, say, a Connor Hellebuyck in Winnipeg and a John Gibson in Anaheim, other than the team that's around them and how they play and what they allow an elite talent to do. It's going to be another long, hard year in Anaheim.
If you're the Anaheim Ducks and you're announcing you're going into a rebuild, what's the purpose of having John Gibson for the next 6 years? At $6.4 million a year.
Because he's still a relatively young goalie.
He's a very good goalie. I think he's a very good goalie.
And if it takes them
great value for him.
If it takes them 6 years to rebuild, then we have a whole separate problem. Like the goalie is the most important thing you have. And you're gonna move him and hope you find another one. Like the Devils are still trying to find another goalie. Like, he's a known commodity, and you need to get him through this. So when he gets on the other end, he's at the prime of his career, and you're ready to contend. Because you can become ready to contend with all those guys, and then all of a sudden you have a big gaping hole in net again because mm-hmm. you've traded him for one or two pieces. He's your most valuable asset.
He is. And I, but if you're rebuilding and you want to gather assets, he's your most valuable asset.
Well, I think they're closer than 6 years to me.
Well, he's got 6 years left on his deal, I'm saying. But if he's already, he could be already at that mode. By the middle of this season, he could be in the mode of like, I can't take this anymore.
Yeah, well, it's not his decision.
No, it's not. But it could impact everything else around the team. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's a fair question. I've wondered that about goalies on rebuilding teams. Like, if to me, John Gibson's different because he's 28 years old. He's still very much in the prime of his career. He was been on that team the whole way. But, you know, if you're rebuilding, to me, it's like the last position you fill then rather than the first one. In a way, a really good goalie could ruin your draft status a little bit too, you know, if you're really trying to get there. But he's a very valuable commodity. And if he's frustrated, that could be alarming there in Anaheim. But we'll see. I think it's going to be another tough year. They don't score. They just don't score at all there.
Yeah, no, he has to be perfect every night. But like I said, I want to circle back to the Central for a minute because I think there's two really interesting storylines going on. The first one, and we can just brush over it, is Jonathan Toews is back. He's going to play tonight on Wednesday. First game in over a year. He missed all of last year. I believe it's 5 out of 6 practices that he's taken part in now, and he's going to play tonight. And the question was, what kind of workload would he be able to handle coming back? And I think to this point, he's answered it. I mean, he said all along it's day to day. He doesn't know, you know, whatever this illness is, which we've never gotten any clarity on. You know, he doesn't know day to day when he wakes up whether he's going to feel good enough to play. But so far the returns have been great, and it'll be awesome to see him on the ice tonight. But the other one, and caused a little consternation here at the Rink podcast because of the timing, is Kirill Kaprizov signed literally 30 minutes after we put our podcast to bed. It was still a great podcast, but all the things we talked about came to fruition, right? Like, there was a pressure point. Billy Guerin knew what needed to be done because he had been that player. Kaprizov, he knew what had been done. He was ready for when he signed. He was in Florida. He had already gone through his quarantine, his vaccination, everything. He could hop on a plane and be ready to play the next day, serve a one-day quarantine. And now he's in camp and he's good to go. 5 years, $45 million. You know, you can argue all you want about the freight, but that's the going number now. Like, that's the number. If you want that guy in camp, that's the number you're going to pay. And I think it's important for them because you talk about the Central and how deep it is, and everybody needs all of their guns firing at the same time to be competitive in that. And I think it's a really interesting stage for what comes next. There's still 3 huge RFAs out there, and we're at the end of camp now. Like, guys are going to start missing because of quarantine and travel and everything else. You're looking at guys possibly missing the start of the season, and that's Brady Tkachuk in Ottawa and the 2 guys in Vancouver, Pettersson, the forward, and Hughes, the defenseman. None of them are signed, and there hasn't been a ton of movement, and that pressure point is just going to start to build, especially in Vancouver. You know, we've talked about Ottawa being a little bit away. Vancouver wasn't good last year, but with those 2 guys in the Pacific, there's no reason they can't be near the top. So they're going to have to get something done at some point.
Yeah, and I thought that the Pettersson and the Brady Tkachuk contracts would be slam dunks after Kirill Kaprizov signed. To be honest with you, like, I thought, like, okay, here's your ballpark. Find a number, you know, within that ballpark. 5 years, $45 million is the ballpark. If you want to go 6, maybe a little more, less, whatever it may be. But to me, it was, you know, the negotiation should have gotten easier with that contract, especially, you know, especially for the 2 forwards. For Quinn Hughes, it could be a shorter term deal that they're looking at, you know, maybe, you know, doing a little bit more, and then bang, he hits it big. He didn't take the rise last season. He didn't rise the way Cale Makar did in his second season. You know, the Canucks fell, as did Quinn Hughes a little bit. So maybe you go shorter term, and that could be the difference in thinking there. We're not privy to that information. They should do an all access show of agents and GMs. Okay. Talking about this stuff, because I would love to hear that. I would love to watch that show of where these things go. But Sean, I think it's this weekend. I think that's the point where, you really hit it. Like, it's Wednesday now. If these guys aren't in by Friday or Saturday, now you're really talking with, travel restrictions, quarantine, all that stuff. Now, like you mentioned, you're really talking about nearing the start of the regular season here. So we're getting into October in a couple of days. Season's around the corner. You got to get these guys in. There are pressure points. I think we're hitting the last of the pressure point before you really, really start to worry about them being there. And that's this weekend. But I am surprised that Pettersson and Tkachuk aren't in yet. Because, like I said, once Kirill Kaprizov signed, I thought those deals were coming down the pike shortly after. And it didn't happen. And now it should make it. I don't think Vancouver and Ottawa fans should have been worrying a week ago, maybe even 3-4 days ago. But I think they're getting to the point now where they should start worrying.
For sure. And I just had to, while you were talking, I just had to check my email and Twitter just to make sure that they didn't sign.
Right. Which, by the way, we'll put this podcast to bed. And then they'll sign. So we're just I'm putting that out there right now that once this podcast is put to bed, if they sign, that's why we didn't talk about it. And we'll just talk about it next week. And like we're doing with Kaprizov, but that is something that very clearly could happen because it already has happened, Sean.
This is like the new SI jinx, right? Or the Madden jinx or whatever jinx they have. Or like when we started playing in Europe, I think it was like the first 5 years the NHL played in Europe, one of the teams that went to Europe got to the Stanley Cup final. And it was the team that I covered on every one of those trips. And that was kind of my selling point. I was going to lend myself out to the highest bidder. Oh, you want me to cover your team when you go to Europe? What's in it for me? So now GMs either should come on the show or they should send us a little gratuity to speak about their players so they'll be signed.
Yeah, sweet. You would ask what's in it for me when you get a trip to Europe out of it.
Somebody's got to pay for the beer.
No, that there you go. That's very true. Two other things before we get out of here. Critical dates calendar, Sean, is out. March 13th is the trade deadline. March 21st is the trade deadline. Push back a little bit, probably because of the Olympic break. The Olympic break is February 3rd through the 22nd. And I did want to give a shout out to Jack Barzee, Lester Patrick Trophy winner this year. Jack Barzee has been, he's going to get the Lester Patrick Trophy for outstanding service to hockey in the United States. And this is a guy, if you follow what he's done, you read about what he's done, it's been nothing short of just promoting hockey in the United States and promoting US-born hockey players from his days at the USHL to this day scouting with the Washington Capitals, to his days long career scouting with NHL Central Scouting. So congratulations to Jack for the significant honor of the Lester Patrick Trophy.
Yeah, great guy, great hockey guy. And let's just make another shout out to another great hockey guy before we go. And unfortunately, not on as high a note. Peter McNabb announced today that he has cancer and he's in that fight and he's going to continue to work. He does the Colorado Avalanche games on TV. And I've known Peter for a long time. I grew up watching him as a Bruins center. He was phenomenal. And then when I moved here, he was the analyst on the Devils games. And my first few years of covering the Devils was, going to morning skates with Peter and, spending time knowing his dad, Max, who was with the Devils for a long time as a GM and then as an advisor. Great hockey family. Wish all the best for Pete. He came out and he said, I want people to know. So, if somebody else is going through this, they don't feel as alone. And to me, that's always anytime this happens, it was the same thing with Eddie Olczyk and with other guys, like to put others before you when you're in the most personal battle of your life, like that's courage. And that's what makes these men who they are, as elite hockey players and as elite men and to be involved in a business like this for that long. So all the best to Peter as he makes this fight and just know that the hockey world's behind him.
100%. Couldn't have said it better myself. We agree on that. We didn't agree on a lot of things on this podcast, but we definitely agree on that. And we also, Sean and I, will agree if you guys will go and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review us. Let us know how we're doing. Toss us some questions at The Rink on Twitter, at DRosenNHL. And Sean, you are at @SRourke_NHL. The underscore is important, right?
Yes. Distinctive.
Distinctive. The underscore is important. So at @SRourke_NHL. And we thank Jack Campbell. Go watch All or Nothing, Toronto Maple Leafs. It debuts October 1st. Hockey's coming. The regular season's around the corner. So enjoy the rest of the preseason. We'll be back next week.